Game on.
Game on.
2FM.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. You're very welcome to Tuesday's Game On. As you heard there in the news with Aidan, news just filtering through from Hanover, where police have cancelled tonight's scheduled international friendly between Germany and Holland after the stadium was evacuated when a suspicious object was found inside. An announcement by police informing spectators within the past hour or so that they should leave quickly but do so without panic. So we will bring you more details on that as the story develops. It again puts into context maybe the importance of sport in contrast to many other things which are ongoing in the world at the minute. But with the night that is in it, with the night that we had last night, you will forgive us if we bask in the glory and certainly the satisfaction of the Republic of Ireland having qualified for Euro 2016. Ireland last night becoming the 22nd nation to do so. We have some reaction to come. We're hoping to hear from one of the heroes of the Irish side. We will certainly chat to Eamon Dunphy about the game. We had planned in advance of that news from Hanover to chat about security around next summer's tournament. We will do that in the company of security analyst and expert Declan Power. We'll also chat about the week's European football with Mark Langdon. Much more to come in the programme as well. Jonathan Sexton on Leinster's horrendous start to their European season. Anthony Foley is amongst the voices we will also hear from before 8 o'clock as injuries mount in the Munster camp. Gary Murphy is with me in studio. How are you, sir?
Very well, Damien, yourself?
Quite. I'm not too bad. I'm kind of, you know, I struggle to fully comprehend where we're at with people going to a sporting event, people going to a concert, and all of a sudden they find themselves at the centre of incidents, the like of which we had in Paris at the weekend. And we are hoping that it isn't anything as serious in Hanover this evening, obviously. But again, an international friendly. Belgium, Spain had to be called off. That was scheduled to be played tonight. Germany, Holland has been called off now as a result as well. So it's the world we live in.
Yeah, it is. They're attacking our liberties and they're attacking everything, you know, that's positive and happy in the West.
Bono was on with Dave Fanning on 2FM right here on Saturday morning, and he talked about that it's the move now to attack the things that we love, to attack enjoyment, attack art, attack freedom. But, you know, very little we can do about it. You were telling me before we came on air, you had a brush with a similar enough incident to this when you were on tour.
Yeah, I played in Qatar in 2003, and the war broke out on the Monday, the Gulf War, and I was actually missing the cut and ran from the 17th tee to the 18th because darkness was falling. So basically, if you tee off, unless it's lightning, you can finish out the hole. So the two got, Richard Green was actually leading the tournament, and I got up and teed off while they were putting out in 17, and meant that, you know, I could get on a flight that night and get out of there, and we had to go via Cyprus. And because at the time, it was, you know, with the weapons of mass destruction, we didn't know what Saddam Hussein had, and the rumor was, because the Qataris were aligned with the West, that he was going to be firing Scuds into Qatar. So it was a kind of a strange environment to be in, and I got home Saturday morning and the war broke out Monday.
But like, you're out on course or you're in the locker room. Like, how can your head concentrate? Like, it you know, golf pales into insignificance when there is stuff like that going on in the world. Or is it just a case that this is my job, this is what I have to do, there's people here to see us, we need to put on the show?
Oh, that's it. That's the way it was. You just get on with it. Okay. And unfortunately, I was playing, you know, poorly at the time and probably didn't need an excuse to lose concentration, but that was certainly a different one to normal.
This may be the only time in my career in the sports department in RTE that I'm going to introduce a clip of Bono, but here's what Bono had to say to Dave at the weekend.
And you just realise they hate music, they hate women, and they hate all the things that we love. And this is an illness that's in the world now, and we just can't give into it and try to be sympathetic to the people who have fallen prey to this illness. And of course we should love our enemies and all of that, and because they are victims too, but we can't have them decide how we live.
That's Bono.
I think it's very important, though, and I'm not on from making political statements on a sports show, but it's important to say that we're dealing with terrorists. You know, they might brandy themselves around under a certain Muslim faith or whatever. Like, there's about as non-practicing Muslims as you could possibly be, the same as the IRA, or as non-practicing Catholics you could possibly be. So I think it's very important to
differentiate.
Yeah, totally. But, you know, and it's, I mean, I travelled in the UK a lot, as an Irishman, you know, back in the during the Troubles and stuff and up the north and whatever, and you get tarred with the same brush as well. And I think it's very important for people to be a lot more open-minded about it than some perhaps are.
Okay, I like all that news from Hanover as that story develops. But the game between Germany and Holland tonight has been cancelled as a result of a suspicious object found inside the match venue. Again, you will forgive us if we move on and talk about sport with all that's going on in the world, but I think a lot of us got such a lift from events at the Aviva Stadium last night. 21 and a half hours later, the heart rate is just about returned to normal. I think camper vans have already been rented. Airline tickets have gone through the roof. And across Ireland, I'm sure there are unsuspecting family members are being sold the notion of let's go to France for a month on holidays next year, completely unaware of the fact that they will spend their summer holidays following 23 footballers around the European Championships. We will begin with events at the Aviva Stadium last night, the Republic of Ireland securing their place at Euro 2016 with a 3-1 aggregate win over Bosnia-Herzegovina. And let's be very honest, every man in Ireland wants to be Jonathan Walters.
Jonathan Walters, who has scored 3 times in the qualifying campaign, 8 international goals, runs up, big opportunity, and he scores! And Ireland hit the front! Jonathan Walters throws it low to people's right-hand side, and Ireland go in front of the Aviva Stadium. Ireland 1, Bosnia-Herzegovina 0!
And I think he waited on Begovic to move slightly to his left. Post, the goalkeeper's already gone the wrong way. Great finish, great penalty kick, marvellous lead for Ireland.
Free kick taken by Robbie Brady, it's a great ball in as well, and a chance, and it's there! Ireland have scored, it's Walters again! Unbelievable! Is that the goal that sends Ireland to France? It may well be! Ireland 2, Bosnia-Herzegovina 0, Jonathan Walters! Again.
Jonathan Walters, how does it feel right now? We've qualified for the European Championship Finals.
Unbelievable. Been a long hard 2 years, but we got there. That was a plan from the start, and every single player's played a part in this.
Tonight, John, 2 goals. The penalty, first of all. You scored a penalty here the last time. The other side.
Yeah, missed a few of my time, but when it's here to take, I'll always step up, I'll always put my hand up, and thankfully hit the back of the net. We've got there now, and then the hard work starts next summer. Delighted.
Obviously, I'm delighted. I'm delighted for the nation. I think that we will have a big following going to France. So it's really great. Mostly, I'm delighted for the players.
Martin O'Neill rounding off that collection of voices and incidents from last night's game. Brian Kerr, Adrian Eames and Jonathan Walters himself featuring. 51552 at Game On 2FM for your tweets if you want to take part in the conversation or if you've got anything to reflect upon from last night's game. Let's begin the programme. Another Bono connection. The man who definitively wrote the book on U2, Eamon Dunphy, is with us. Eamon, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Damien. I'd like to disagree with the idea that I want to be Jonathan Walters. I want to be Rory McIlroy, because I've been taking this call in my private jet. And I'm hoping Gary will coach me.
Well,
Gary Murphy. I'd like to be Rory.
Do you play golf?
I used to when I was playing football. I was brutal.
Because, you know, like, I'm sure we could arrange a lesson between yourself and Gary. Actually, Gary, you'd probably be only too happy to spend a couple of hours in the company of Eamon Dunphy.
Absolutely, yeah.
Eamon, I don't want to get too serious, but the Belgium-Spain game called off tonight. It's going to be a very emotional night at Wembley. This news, which is reaching us from Hanover in the last couple of hours, it just, I don't know, like where in the grand scheme of all that is important in life, you know, where does football come?
Well, it comes, you know, very high on the cultural. It's popular culture. I think Carlo Ancelotti said at the weekend, ironically, he said, of all the things that aren't really vital, sport and soccer in particular is the most important. In other words, your health and, you know, the well-being of your family and life and death matters. But football is, you know, it gives people joy, it gives people a means of self-expression. And if you look down to the grassroots where it's played by schoolboys and adults, it helps people to bond. It's central to the activities of communities. If you look at the great work that GAA does all over the country, in every townland, in every village, in every city, the GAA is our national organization, sporting organization. And what it provides is food for our souls and our imaginations and our dreams. And even if we're not ourselves the heroes, we can admire them and identify with them. It's a huge part, as all culture is, but popular culture in particular, which whether it's popular music or sport, is hugely important to the quality of people's lives. And I think you raised the question there of security in France next summer. I think it's a grave issue, that, and it's not easy to imagine that we can be sanguine about it at any stage.
Oh yeah, and we'll be chatting much more about that later on in the programme. I got home from the Aviva last night, and probably no more than yourself, I was bouncing off the walls with the emotion of what we'd all gone through. So I sat down to re-watch the game, and in the early hours of the morning, a very emotional Eamon Dunphy was on my TV screen. Last night meant an awful lot to you.
A very emotional Eamon Dunphy was in a Chinese restaurant with Liam Brady getting stoned. Getting stocious with a couple of other friends, and we had a lovely night because it was such a wonderful night for Irish soccer, which is a bit of a Cinderella sport these days. I mean, with the rugby players and the golfers and, you know, the fantastic jockeys, trainers, breeders in Ireland who are so world renowned. Soccer is a Cinderella sport, and I come from that community. I belong to that community. And John and Liam does. I said to John after the program, I said, no chance of getting a tear out of you, is there? And he said, funny enough, he said, I was nearly there. And John isn't given to that sort of those overt displays of emotion. But it matters a lot for football and football fans. And you could see the joy there last night. And for the players, for Martin O'Neill and his staff, it's a wonderful reward, I think, for a disciplined, resilient battle through this, the first qualifying campaign for Martin O'Neill. And they've had to overcome adversity, bad luck, injuries, suspensions, stuff like that. As recently as last week, with two key players, John Walters being one of them, missing for Friday night. We came through all of that, and it's a lovely story.
But let's be very, very honest. It has been an absolute roller coaster of a qualification campaign, and the margin between success and failure, it kind of reminds you how slim it can be at times. Because if you and I were sitting here a couple of months back chatting, say, after the Scotland game, you know, the management were under serious pressure, the players were being called into question again, and very few people would have imagined that we'd be looking towards flights and camper vans and ferries and everything else to France next summer.
Well, I said after the Scotland game on the panel that I thought we were still in with a shout, because I think we had Georgia to come, we had Gibraltar to come, so that was 6 points I thought we'd get in the autumn, whereas Scotland had to go to Georgia, and that was a key result. I didn't necessarily think Scotland would get a result there, and they didn't, they were beaten. So that transformed everything. And then, of course, I was probably the only person in the country who thought we could beat Germany, and we did. So it was looking bad, but I thought that was a pessimistic view. I think these players are better than some people give them credit for. I think they're more resilient, but I also think there's a skill factor there with Robbie Brady, who's emerged, you know, as a really important player for the team, a leader. Wes Hoolihan has been terrific when he's played. John Walters, John O'Shea had a really good campaign, but then Darren Randolph, the goalkeeper, emerges from nowhere. He's 28. He's in the reserves at West Ham, and he was so composed and assured and good when he needed to be in two big matches in Germany, in Bosnia tonight, and again last night. So it didn't happen by accident. There's great potential in this squad to give us a really good summer, unlike 2012 when Trapattoni took us to Poland and we were obliterated.
Eamon, do you think he'll allow, you know, if everybody is fit and we have a decent squad going over there, do you think he'll allow them to play a little bit more and have a go?
Well, a little bit more. I think the fact that Robbie Brady, you know, played in midfield and Wes started on Friday night, Gary, was important. It was a signal that he was prepared to trust the invention and subtlety of players like that. But then last night he went and reverted. He put Robbie Brady back to left back. And I think the problem is Whelan and McCarthy. They both do the same job and are happy as a holding midfield player in front of the back four, and they put their foot in, they get a tackle, but they're not happy to receive the ball and be creative. So I don't think he'll fundamentally change, Gary. I know I've watched his teams play for almost 30 years now, and they've always had a big centre forward. Mm-hmm. He does like to to go Route 1 at times, but I think there's a bit more balance required. But I think he'll always err on the side of conservative. He's a conservative coach, and he is a coach who has an outstanding CV. Leicester, he made Leicester a top club, which they never had been, and he made Aston Villa a top six club. Two seasons running before he fell out with the owner, and he was on the right there because the owner wouldn't give him the money to make them a Champions League team. And of course at Celtic he overcame Rangers, he made Celtic number one team, took them to the final of the UEFA Cup where they lost 4-3 to Porto after extra time, and of course Porto went on with Mourinho to win the Champions League the following year. Martin O'Neill is a very, very heavy dude, you know. Now there's one key question: is he adaptable tactically to the modern international game? And I'd put a question mark there. I don't think he is.
But he's far more so than the previous regime.
Yeah.
Like, the point was being made. Actually, Brian Kerr, I think, in the Irish Times this morning, talking about he has modernised our approach to international football. Would you go along with that?
Yeah, well, you couldn't have taken it backwards.
That's well, it's fair point, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Trapattoni was hopelessly reactionary and conservative and didn't believe in the players and didn't really know the players, didn't really know the English game, didn't respect the players. I mean, it was palpable. You can't be like that. Martin's not like that. And the first thing he said after the game last night was how much he esteemed our players, and that's a great thing. And they seem to have a good rapport, the coaching staff and the team, and the players between themselves seem to have a great spirit, and that's, you know, it's intangible but a huge factor in international football. You see so many teams that don't have that, so that would count for a lot. But we won't start pinging around playing it, and you know, that's fair enough. We could do with, you know, another quality midfield player for sure.
I know today is a day for, you know, maybe reflecting on the achievement, and you know, I don't want to get too stuck into tactical changes and everything for a tournament that doesn't start for 206 days. But you look at it, like, we've serious concerns about left back. Sure, like, okay, yeah, if Stephen Ward was playing more regular football, perhaps he'd do a job. But, like, last night, Robbie Brady at left back, you try to solidify your defence by taking away one of your main attacking threats. So, left back is an area for concern. Likewise, like, goals haven't been plentiful for us. If you take away the goals against Gibraltar, we're effectively a goal a game team.
We are, yeah. We've lost Robbie Keane's. You know, Robbie was a prolific goal scorer and just doesn't have the legs anymore and playing in a very poor league, the MLS. But I think in the case of Robbie Brady, Wilson hopefully will get back in the Stoke team. He's a Premier League defender, played centre-half, played left-back. He's a good player, a very good player. So he might be back in the Stoke side at that stage. The goal-scoring element, I think you're right. It's clear that we don't have a regular goal scorer. But we do have, you know, there's ways around that, really. I mean, if you look at Chelsea in the Premier League last year, after Christmas, I think they never won more. You started 1-0, 2-0, 1-0, 1-0. If you're not giving goals away, and we didn't, if you look at the record for this campaign, we didn't give goals away. And there's one other key fact, that we scored a lot of late goals. Important goals, big goals. Hendricks found something against Georgia to get us that winner, and John Walters in fact scored against Scotland when we needed a goal, Shane Long's late goal against Germany. So that all indicates a spirit, it indicates a willingness to battle and sweat, and it also indicates that you've got some very good defenders. And again, Clark and Keo as a partnership last night and on Friday night, I thought I was very, very pessimistic on Friday night when they were up against Dzeko. And again last night, I was very pessimistic. I would have put John O'Shea in, but I didn't know, of course, how fit or not he was. But we don't give much away. And the other big plus, I think, other teams don't like to play us because they know that thing about us, that we're hard, we're resilient, we'll fight, we'll put our foot in. These are all important things. No, we're not dazzling the way the rugby team, the Leinster team, or our rugby team are, or Rory McIlroy is, but we're bloody good, and we're tough, tough-minded, mentally, I think, and I think maybe Brian Cairn made this point, and other people. Mentally, we've been strong through this campaign, and that's a great thing.
And it's interesting as well, you look at the dynamic a couple of months back, we would have worried about the lack of experience within the squad, and you know, like Glenn Whelan last night, captain in the team, is a much maligned player. I know you've had a lot to say about his role within the squad, yeah, and his role within the team over the years, but yet, you know, proponents of him will say he goes in and does a job and whatever else. But like Shay Given, you know, John O'Shea, Robbie not being part of the squad, the supposed young guns have stepped up. So is how much of a challenge is there now for Martin O'Neill that you don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater, but at the same time, would you go with Keown Clark? Does John O'Shea to come back in?
John, I think John would come back in. He's had certainly plenty of experience with Sunderland of defending, but he's become a very good centre-half and a good leader of a defence. Defence needs a leader. It needs someone to marshal what's going on around. Now, Keown did that quite well, but Clark is quite hot-headed and impulsive as a player. John O'Shea would definitely come back in and be the first choice centre-half, but he's very, very experienced. But, you know, there's ways and ways. I'm Gary sitting beside you there. Some guys grind out golf tournaments and win them that way. Rory McIlroy does another way. But, you know, once you have that appetite, if you like, for work and graft, and they're learning. I think Robbie Brady and all these guys will learn and become better as a group and become better in their individual play. They'll go back to their clubs, they'll be better. So I think the whole campaign has been positive in many of its aspects. You can't ask players to do what they're not capable of doing, which is probably where some of my criticism about Whelan and McCarthy, you know, originates. I think you have to play football to win football matches.
Okay, I just want to, there's just a breaking news story here. Stade Francais on their official Twitter account have reported that their game against Munster in the European Champions Cup this weekend is postponed. So we'll follow that up and we'll just try and bring confirmation of that. But Stade Francais themselves on their social media channels this evening saying that game, which is due to take place in Paris this weekend, won't go ahead. Eamon, just to finish, I think there's a lot of people texting in to remind us that you and I on the programme last, I think it was Monday 2 weeks ago, you suggested that Ireland wouldn't go to France, but you'll be as happy to have been proven wrong as anyone there. So yeah, we'll put that to bed. The other thing is that there's a very limited window for Martin O'Neill. Okay, it's not taking place till next June, but talk of a game against Switzerland early next year. That how important is it that the FAI fork out for substantial opposition, that we're not going into a tournament playing teams that are miles off the pace?
I don't think it matters, Damien. I don't think if you play Switzerland, it's fine. You'll find the Switzerland aren't a bad team.
Oh, yeah, well, they will be there as well, yeah.
You don't want to be going up against Spain and getting a hiding, you know.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, we don't want to be going up against, you know, teams miles down the FIFA rankings as we have done at the Aviva over the last couple of years.
I think that won't be a problem, and Martin will work that out. I mean, what players need is game time together, and all the game time they have together is better for them. They become more acquainted with each other's habits, and they're integrated better as a group of people. And on the training ground, you can do a lot in those international weeks. So I don't think that's a problem at all. And, you know, everyone is thrilled what we've done so far. And there's reason to hope we can actually improve on it and really acquit ourselves quite well there.
And it'll roll around before we know it. So
sure will.
There you go. Eamon, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Eamon Dunphy with us there. 51552 for your text, at Game On 2FM for your tweets. So we've had Eamon Dunphy called to task for saying that we wouldn't qualify to play in France. Mark Langdon of the Racing Post is with us. Mark, how are you?
A very nice link there, Damien. An apology, first of all. Yeah, I did fancy Bosnia to progress, I have to say, but very well done to Ireland. The better team, certainly in the second leg, managed to go through, I thought.
Now, we have a text in from Billy in Cork to 51552, who is suggesting that you also tip Norway. But you see, I'll defend you and I'll say that the quality of the teams, that there's such little margins between them that, you know, it's very hard to predict who's going to win these playoff games, Mark, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think as far as Norway go, I mean, if anybody watched the two games, I thought Norway were clearly the better team. I mean, Gabor Kirali, the tracksuit-wearing goalkeeper, he likes his tracksuit bottoms, probably be the first one at a European Championship, I think, to don that attire. He was absolutely outstanding in both legs, really. I think it's probably a boost to everybody else that's qualified that somebody as limited as Hungary has made it through. I thought that they were very, very average over the two games. But like you say, I mean, it's very tight, these playoff games here. A mistake or a moment of brilliance, because I think really Ireland in the first leg, for instance, hadn't created anything, had they, until they sort of popped up with that goal, and I think that really did set them up superbly well for the second leg, and then the penalty decision as well. I mean, some nights that doesn't get given, so it is all about sort of fine margins, and we've got another one, I think, tonight, really, with Sweden against Denmark, because Sweden were cruising at 2-0. A late goal for Denmark suddenly changes everything.
That was actually, it was a brilliant game. Well, maybe technically not brilliant, but it was a great contest, and the derby element of it, there were tackles flying in patches that you'd be jailed for if you did it in other places.
Yeah, it was like watching kind of a Premier League game, really. I felt, the pace of it and stuff like that. Yeah, the technical ability wasn't there, really. But I think the second leg will be just as exciting, really. I can see sort of goals at both ends in that one again tonight.
The big tragedy around all this is that you've got Nicholas Bentner and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and one of them won't make next summer's final. So football is really the big loser, Mark.
Well, yeah, I mean, what a shame if somebody as brilliant as Bentner manages to miss out. I think that there's a lot of people that would like to see Ibrahimovic at, a majors tournament, probably be his last one, you would imagine. I mean, I can't see him hanging his boots up necessarily, but, for him to really be able to sort of put on a show that he can, really sort of show what he's all about, I think he needs to qualify for this one in 2 years' time. He'll definitely be on the downgrade. So I hope that Sweden get there. I think that probably Denmark have got sort of more players of a higher ability, but Sweden, of course, have just got the one outstanding talent on show, and sometimes in a playoff game, that's exactly what you need, somebody like that.
We talked, like it seems an eternity ago, when the extended qualification was starting and the extended Euro 2016, and we questioned if the quality of the football would decline, if the quality of the finals would decline and whatever else. It's been a really enjoyable qualification campaign, and even the dividing of the games over, five or six nights, it hasn't become the all-saturating monster that some people thought it would.
No, I think it's woke up some things that maybe didn't feel like they could qualify. It made more games matter for longer. If you just use the Ireland, Scotland, Poland, Germany group as one example, I mean, that went, right the way down, wasn't it, to the last seconds, whether Ireland, could get a goal to actually qualify automatically. It wasn't to be. But, yeah, I think it has done that. The one thing that I'm concerned about once we get to the Euros is the amount of third teams that qualify. I always think that that's unsatisfactory, because some teams already know what they already know that they don't need to do anything going into their final match, and it can be a little bit sort of complicated, I think, when you get to that. I've much preferred the World Cup, since it's gone to 32 teams and it's a straight, top two go through. So I think that is going to be a slight problem. But if you look down the list at the quality of teams that are there, I mean, I tweeted out tonight, Turkey, for instance, are 100-1, and I think that goes to show everything about the level of ability at this European Championship, because Turkey have got some really good players in their side. So there's so much strength and depth in European football at the moment that you're not going to get a weak group. It doesn't really matter. My only concern, like I say, is that so many third teams qualify for the last 16, and I don't really like that element of it.
I dread to think what odds Ireland must be.
Yeah, it's roughly the same. Yeah, I think there's a little bit bigger around than 100-1, but certainly last night they were 100-1 with the first couple of bookmakers that came on to us. So I think it just goes to show. I mean, Greece were 100-1 when they won the Euros, and it doesn't take that much, really, to go a long way sometimes in a tournament. You just get that little bit of luck, and if you defend well, and Ireland certainly against Bosnia defended really well over the two legs, there's no doubt about that. I mean, I expected Pjanic and Dzeko to cause far more problems than they did, and I think that was a whole team performance, really, to stop Pjanic in the first place from creating the chances for Dzeko. So that does bode well, I think, for the European Championship.
Just before we let you go, just I mentioned Stade Francais tweeting that their European Rugby Champions Cup game with Munster was to be postponed. Munster have since confirmed that, so that game on Sunday will not go ahead. So the game between Stade Francais, Paris and Munster in the European Rugby Champions Cup has been postponed. More details on that as we get it. Mark, probably an emotional night at Wembley tonight, and there seems to be quite a lot of debate over whether or not the game between England and France should have gone ahead at all.
Yeah, I don't know if you're aware as well, Damien, if you've been mentioning it, but Germany against Holland pulled off about 10 minutes ago. It's going to be an emotional game for sure at Wembley tonight. It's really difficult, really, I think, for the players to actually, you know, just go out there and play football. And yet, from a sort of the England players' point of view, the likes of Dele Alli and Eric Dyer, they're going to, you know, have to be selfish, I think, and try to stake a claim for a spot in the European Championship. But it's, you know, obviously football is a very distant second, of importance to the game. And you've got some of the French players, the son of Diarra's cousin, tragically, was killed during the attacks. And Griezmann's sister was actually in the concert hall, but managed to escape. So, I do wonder whether the game should have gone ahead. I think that the French Football Federation should have definitely asked the players. I don't think they should have made that decision on their own and then sort of asked the players afterwards. But hopefully, it's a good night at Wembley, and the French players can get back to some kind of normality, even despite, you know, what's been a very difficult sort of few days for them.
There's further details coming through from Hanover that police have discovered a truck full of explosives, which was designed to look like an ambulance. That's what's coming. It's been reported by a number of news sources that there was a truck bomb disguised as an ambulance near the football stadium in Hanover. Mark, thanks for joining us. Mark Langdon there of the Racing Post. We're going to talk. We had planned in advance of that news from Hanover to discuss the whole area of security around large-scale sporting events and likewise next summer's European 2016 finals. Declan Power, who's a security and defence analyst, is with us. Declan, how are you?
Good, how are you, Damien?
Not too bad at all. That news which reached us a little bit before we went on air this evening, the game between Germany and Holland in Hanover called off. Obviously, the game between Belgium and Spain, which was scheduled to take place tonight, was called off yesterday. And this story now that a truck bomb disguised as an ambulance has been reported by numerous news sources. Sport and large-scale events involving sport have been much at the focus of a number of terrorist groups over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah. Let's just use 9/11 maybe as a template or a yardstick to interpret this by. After 9/11, there was a whole reconfiguration of airport security and reconsideration of how to secure, because the game plan had changed. You know, it wasn't hijackers taking a plane full of people hostage. So something similar is going to happen with regards to large-scale events like football matches and concerts. But on a positive note, what we have to remember is, unlike 9/11, where airliners were actually hijacked, and we all know that what happened, the perpetrators of the terrorism on last Friday, they didn't get into the stadium. They didn't get to do the damage that they had hoped to do. So you could argue that that's a validation for the security procedures as they existed there. I think what you may see happen is a transference of some of the things to large venue security that you see at airports. Now, having said that, an awful lot of these things are largely cosmetic anyway. The real heavy lifting will be done in terms of stopping these things before they get to that to the execution stage, stopping them at the operational planning stage. It makes perfect sense right now at the moment, because things are so fluid and so volatile in how European security services are reacting to this, to cancel events like you've just outlined.
Okay.
So within a fortnight to a month, I would estimate, normal service will resume.
Okay, so it's obviously the focus on this has intensified over the past couple of days with events in Paris and events this evening in Hanover. The Hanover police chief has been quoted by Sky Sports in the last couple of minutes as talking about there being a serious threat to the city this evening and that there were concrete plans to cause an explosion in the stadium. The scrutiny on sporting events has intensified over the past couple of days, but this is a conversation that we could have ahead of every Olympic Games that rolls around, ahead of every FIFA World Cup that rolls around. Is it fair to ponder the extent to which sport and sporting administrators, you know, they have their house in order in regard to how to police these situations? Would you have any concerns about recommending to people to go to France next year for the European Championship Finals?
Not at this point, no, I wouldn't, because, you see, it may sound a bit glib and blasé of me to say it, but these terrorist groups are not omnipotent. They're not invincible, and they're clever, and they do the classic application of knowledge that any weaker adversary will do. They look for chinks in the armor. Well, now those chinks are highlighted in broad daylight, so they're not going to be as open to utilization by the terrorists in the way that they were. So they're not going to keep trying doing the same thing at the same place over and over again.
Okay.
They'll look for another weak link. By the time that rolls around next year, I would imagine that the physical security will have been tested and adapted and tested, and the intelligence and security apparatus, the hole in it, will have been well filled. But the terrorists will be looking at other areas, other things. They will look asymmetrically at this. So what it requires us as a society, stepping back, is to look at all kinds of other considerations. But with regards to large-scale events, you know, they want us to be petrified because they're not necessarily going to have the manpower or the expertise to get in through these things with the whole spotlight that's on them at the moment.
Okay. Appreciate your insight, Declan. Good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us. Declan Power there, security and defence analyst. Loads of texts. Lads, delighted Ireland qualified as one of the 24 team. That's right, 24. It's time they did something there now. Instead of making up the numbers like the last time, we need to raise the bar a little. Texting reminding Mark that he tipped Norway and Bosnia last week. Why can't Ireland go and win it? We've already beaten Germany and Holland won't be there.
I think in that other text, the guy, it's a great point he makes about Richie Townsend. I think he should be included in the squad.
See, the problem is Martin O'Neill's squads are so big that, you know, is there any harm in bringing lads in, let them train and see what they're like?
Well, totally. I mean,
40-man squad for the last
squad. Surprised Cawley wasn't in the last squad. There was that many out.
Not as surprised as Cawley was.
He scored 29 goals from midfield.
Richie Towell now rather than Alan Cawley.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't care what league you play in. That's stunning. And give them the experience. Well, I think it should be afforded to
51552 at Game On 2FM. If you're just turning on the radio, the game between the Netherlands and Germany this evening in Hanover has been postponed as a result of what has been described as a serious and concrete threat to the city. It has also been confirmed by both Stade Francais Paris and Munster Rugby that their game, scheduled to take place on Sunday in the European Champions Cup, has been postponed. 51552 for your text, at Game On 2FM for your tweets. We're going to take a break in just a second, but before that, this week on the programme, we are counting you down to the Air Grid International Rules, which takes place this Saturday, with Ireland's best Gaelic footballers in the country taking on Australia under lights at Croke Park. Official sponsor of the game, Air Grid, have very kindly given us some nice prizes to give away this week. We have a family set of four tickets tonight and tomorrow, and on Thursday we've got one overall prize of a family set of four tickets with accommodation included on the night. Plus, to make it a very memorable prize, one of the children from that family will get to be a mascot at the match as well. That's an impressive...
What a cool prize.
What a cool prize. All the details on how you can enter that competition coming your way in a minute and 36 seconds time.
Get your game face on.
Game on 2FM.
And you're very welcome back. This is Damien O'Mara sitting in for Hugh Cahill this evening. As mentioned, all this week on the show, we are counting down to the Air Grid International Rules on Saturday. All of those... Gaelic footballers, the best in the country, taking on Australia. Great environment under lights at Croke Park. If you've never been to Croke Park under lights, it's worth enjoying. And it's the one time where county rivalry is put aside and fans from all over the country can unify behind an Irish team. Air Grid, much like the GAA, operate right across the country, and as an official sponsor of the International Rules, they want you to be there this Saturday. They've given us a family set of four tickets to the game to give away. And to be in with a chance to win, all you have to do is answer this very, very simple question. Now, The clue is in the question. Okay?
Surprise, surprise.
Clue is in the question. What Australian Oscar-winning gladiator was born in Wellington, New Zealand? You're not allowed to enter, by the way. Text your answer to us now. 51552 is our number. We will announce tonight's winner before the end of the programme.
Good singer as well.
He's into his rugby league.
On the Late Late.
Did he sing on the Late Late?
He did indeed.
Well, there you go. You see, now you know he's a big star because he was on the Late Late with Tubbs.
Absolutely.
You
know? And it was the real one as well.
Oh. Huh? So they're
are they shooting me down, are they?
No, they're not. They're shooting. Actually, no. Connor Cunningham on Twitter shooting.
Yeah,
you
I down. Yeah, I don't
not
agree with Connor at all. Jamie Vardy for Leicester was playing what in Division Two a couple of years ago.
Hang on a second. Roy Hodgson is handing out England caps like snuff at a wake.
No, but he scored what 9 goals consecutively in the Premiership. You don't know what these guys can do until you try them out. And it's not like we have an abundance of goal scoring midfielders either.
Okay,
give him a lash. Why not?
It's more than a cap you want to give him. Anyway, 51552 for the competition at Game On 2FM if you want to make contact with us this evening. That news, again, if you're just joining us, the game between Munster and Stade Francais in the European Rugby Champions Cup this weekend has been postponed. Both clubs have confirmed. We're going to talk about rugby next. There was unwanted history for Leinster in the European Rugby Champions Cup on Sunday afternoon last. Wasps 33-6 win at the RDS marked Leinster's biggest ever home defeat in European competition. It increases significantly the task that Leo Cullen's Chargers face in trying to advance to the knockout stages of the competition this season. They travel to face Bath at the Rec this weekend. They then face into back-to-back games with the unstoppable European force that is Toulon. Saturday's game marked Jonathan Sexton's first outing for the province in Europe since rejoining from Racing 92, and understandably it is not a game he reflects upon too positively. He has been in conversation with Gary Moran.
It's one thing losing, it's another thing losing at home, and then I suppose it's another thing losing by the margin that we did, but you have to park it in some ways, but you have to learn from it as well. And you know, I was surprised, you know, looking back on it, that we weren't good enough, which is obvious. But the other part of it is, you know, we felt during the game we were quite comfortable at times. You know, we started really well into a very strong breeze, a very strong wind, and you know, we were sort of staying, you know, 6-0 then to 9-6 to them, and we still felt happy enough with that scoreline with the wind at our backs in the second half. And then to go in 16-6 down at half time, we felt it was probably, you know, against run of play, because they didn't have much pressure on us. Now, like I said, it still wasn't, parts of our game weren't good enough. And then after conceding the second try, we really had to chase the game and played into their hands, and we made too many errors in that second half especially. So look, it wasn't a great day. For most of us, it was the worst day we've had in a Leinster jersey, and it's very disappointing to do that at home in front of our supporters in the first game of European Cup.
There's doom and gloom, obviously, to an extent with the Leinster supporters, as you'd expect after that result. And yet you say yourself, other than that bounce of the ball just before half-time, there were elements that were quite good in the first half. So I'm interested to know how it was set at half-time as regards your performance, or what needed to be improved, or what was said in the dressing room.
Yeah, like I said, we sort of came in at halftime 16-6 down, and we felt that we were the ones that were in their 22 a lot and putting pressure on them. And but we said we had to park that and we had to go ahead and get the next score. And the worst thing that we did was we started the second half poorly, and you know, next thing we're 23-6 down. We're playing with a win, but we've got to chase the game. We've got to go and get tries. And you know, it didn't happen, and that played into their hands. They were very organised. You know, we've got to give them credit. They've got some excellent players, guys that can hurt you, and they certainly did hurt us. Guys like Pete Howe and All Black at 15, George Smith in the back row, Hughes was pretty outstanding. You know, they've got good players throughout their whole team, so we were playing against a good team as well, and we knew if we weren't on our game we'd be punished, and that's what happened.
I remember, I think it was the back-to-back games last year where you weren't playing, obviously being over in Racing, but Leinster won in Northampton by a huge score and then lost at the Aviva, and I remember Matt O'Connor saying at the time, we weren't really that brilliant over there, everything went right, and we weren't that awful at home here, and we lost a rare home game. Do you feel that actually you weren't that far away despite coming out in such a bad scoreline?
Yeah, well, it seems that every time they, you know, got anywhere near a 22, they scored points and they added up. And yeah, look, we've got to just look at the game and see where we can go better. And like you said, a week is a long time in sport, and you're always judged on your last game. And hopefully we're in a lot different place this time next week. But again, we know we're going to a tough place against a very good team, and that's going to make it even tougher.
Are there specifics, other than handling errors, which just happen, are there specifics in terms of structure or anything like that that need to be addressed, or that the team have reviewed and feel have to change for next week?
Yeah, definitely. We've got, I suppose we're trying to work in a bit of a new structure at the moment. And it's a good structure to play in. It allows you to get on the ball and make decisions, but there's parts of that structure that broke down badly at the weekend and that need to be a hell of a lot better. And part of it is guys being accountable for the ball and you know, working hard to get back in position. And yeah, so you know, there is parts of our sort of structural play that need to improve, but other parts like winning 50-50s and winning the collisions as well, I suppose they're the parts that are unacceptable, that you know, you can't turn up to a rugby match and not win them.
That's Jonathan Sexton chatting to Gary earlier this afternoon. A reminder, again, in case you're just joining us, that Munster's game against Stade Francais, scheduled to take place in Paris this weekend, has been postponed. Gary Murphy's with me in studio. We have a mountain of stuff to talk about in golf. I suppose most notably, for the first time since the French Open, July of last year, GMAC back in the winner's enclosure. Victory on the first playoff hole yesterday, so I'm take the title over Scotland's Russell Knox and American Jason Bone at the OHL Classic in Mexico. Brilliant approach shot, which won it for him, got him back to winning ways.
It really gives me something to kind of grab onto. You know, you go through a year like this, you think, am I finished? You know, am I not good enough? You know, you ask yourself all the questions. You know, we've all been there. This is the game of golf. It's very difficult, you know, and I think I've been dreaming of this day. And I said to myself that I was going to appreciate it when it came. So I'm going to appreciate this one, let me tell you, because this year's been a grind. My whole team, caddy, coaches, managers, my wife, you know. So it's been a tough year, but this is special. You know, I stuck to my task the last 3 or 4 months. You know, I've kept grinding, you know. Big thanks to everyone who's, you know, kept trusting and kept believing in me. And this is a nice step back to where I want to be, you know, because I want to be back up there and I want to win more major championships and I want to win more tournaments. So this is special.
That's GMAC chatting after he won yesterday. He needed it badly. 15th in the world at the end of 2014, dropped to 85th ahead of the weekend. 3 top 10 finishes in ranking events this year, up to 62nd in the world, which will be important for the Ryder Cup and potentially for the Olympics.
I think it's more important for his career. His career was, as he said last week, you know, he kind of down tools on the European Tour. He didn't get in, didn't make the playoffs in the FedEx, didn't get in the final stage of the race to Dubai, and he was on a serious free fall in the rankings and got back to basics, really, and went back to try secure his car because his exemption for the PGA Tour was up at the end of next season. So he was, you know, in that precarious position that most golfers are year in, year out. An amazing turnaround to win, and fabulous slider from.
Talk us through that shot, the approach on the first playoff hole, because it looked like he had thrown it away completely on the 16th, and, you know, he had given away the title, and then he pulls out just 1 minute of brilliance, which he conceded he had picked the wrong club, and his caddy had to say, here, sort yourself out there, pal.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, they've been together a long time, and a good caddy, more often than not during a round, will only make, really get involved in one or two decisions when one another, when they know one another so well. But you know, he had total trust in Ken Conboy, who actually is married to an Irish girl from Thomastown, Liz Kerwin, to say, yeah, I think it's 6 iron, and Ken goes, no, it's not, it's a 5, and he hit that 5 as hard as he could, and he earned his 10% there and then, and that's what great caddies can do.
To talk, you talked there about, you know, PGA Tour exemptions and European Tour commitments and everything. How notable is the announcement today from the European Tour? They've cut the final series from 4 events to 3, but they have realigned what it is required of you to basically maintain your European Tour status.
Well, I think they're just aware of the fact that it's getting tighter and tighter for guys to do the 2.
So it was, you did have to play 13
events. 13
events,
yeah.
5 events.
Yeah.
And they exclude the majors and the WGC. So it's eminently manageable for the modern pro.
It is, but the way the travelling is going at towards the end of the season, start of the season, and they're kind of trying to hang on to their own, I think. For a long time, the European Tour pretended that they're trying to compete, and Pele seems to be doing a lot of good things, and I think it's good for the tour. The problem is that, you know, the guys down the back get marginalised and squeezed out, but that's just the way of the world in professional golf.
Irish Open tickets on sale, government funding and government support announced for the Irish Open today. I'm sure we'll chat about that loads between now and next year when it takes place. But of far greater importance, back to Q School.
Yeah.
Overall, your assessment on, you know, Damon McGrain tied for 14th place, Paul Dunn is in the mix, Kevin Phelan's in the mix, Simon Thornton's in the mix. It's like everything. You want to stay alive until the final couple of rounds. So a lot of work done, a lot more to do.
Yeah, the cut fell today. It's a 6-round event, it's 4 rounds. Today was the 4th round. And thankfully we still have Irish guys involved. We've 4 guys out of the 7 made the cut, which is very good. I kinda said last week if we could get, you know, 2 or 3 to get a card out, it would be great. But Damien is well in there. He's tied 14th and suits Damien down to the ground. It's a real scrap down there, and there's no one tougher or braver than Damien. So I expect him to hang in there and get through. And Paul Dunn is tied 18, top 25 in ties get a card. So Paul Dunn, remarkable. He's at first stage, second stage and through to finals. Last year, only 2 players out of the 990-odd did that. So he's in exalted company at the moment. Hopefully he can hang in there. And Kevin Phelan and Simon Thornton, you know, not still within touching distance, but they need to shoot good scores the last 2 rounds, probably somewhere around the 6-7 under mark combined.
Disappointment for Peter Lowry, Brian Casey and Rory McGee. Rory McGee in particular, very briefly, if you would, had an epic swing in terms of, you know, score. Like, it just, the wheels fell off the wagon completely, and one disastrous round.
Yeah, it was a catastrophe. It was a huge round, but he's had a great year in the Challenge Tour, and he'll learn enormously from that, and he'll get a few starts in Mentor through that ranking next year, and it's onwards and upwards for him. And Peter will get a lot of starts next year as well, so it's on his ranking, so he'll know where he will and won't play. So it's not the end of the world by any stretch.
Okay, just about time for us to go. Louise is on the way. Before we do, Richard McSweeney and Nace, good evening to you, sir.
Hey, how are you, Ian?
Not a bother. Tell me the name of the Australian Oscar-winning gladiator that was born in Wellington, New Zealand.
Russell Crowe.
Well done, you're tonight's winner. Enjoy that family ticket to the International Rules this weekend with thanks to our friends in Airgrid.
Cheers, thanks very much.
Louise is on the way, Mo Kay, later on in the evening from all of us here till tonight, or tomorrow night even. Good luck.